Blog Talk Radio.
Involved in a war on Asian soil which is not checked and stopped, and poisoned the very soul of our nation. I'm not going to say that all of our problems will be solved if the war in Vietnam is ended, but I do say that the war makes it infinitely more difficult to deal with these problems. When a nation becomes obsessed with the guns of war, it loses its social perspective, and programs of social uplift suffer. This is just a fact of history, so that do face many more difficulties as a result of the war. It's much more difficult to really arouse a conscience during the time of war. That is something about a war like this that makes people insensitive. It dulls the conscience. It strengthens the forces of reaction, and it brings into being bitterness, and hatred, and violence. I think the biggest problem now is that we got our gains over the last 12 years at bargain rate, so to speak. It didn't cost the nation anything. In fact, it helped the economic side of the nation, the integrated lunch counters and public accommodations. It didn't cost the nation anything to get the right to vote established. Now we are confronting issues that cannot be solved without costing the nation billions of dollars. Now, I think this is where we're getting our greatest resistance. They may put it on many other things, but we can't get rid of slums and poverty without it costing the nation something. I feel that nonviolence is really the only way that we can follow, because violence is just so self-defeating. A riot ends up creating many more problems for the Negro community than it solves. You can, through violence, burn down a building, but you can't establish justice. You can murder a murderer, but you can't murder murder through violence. You can murder a hater, but you can't murder hate. And what we are trying to get rid of is hate and injustice and all of these other things that continue the long night of man's inhumanity to man. When we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every citizen, every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at
last." Thank y'all for tuning in to We Talk Productions, one of the only stations talking about black problems and black solutions. You're listening to The Elephant in the Room, and I'm your host, Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Jamarian Harris. Tonight, I will be discussing The Art of War, How Welfare Destroyed Black Families. And I recently came up with that subject matter because of this recent Trump stuff, cutting off welfare benefits. And I've been telling people about this since 2017, since he passed legislation abolishing the Department of HUD, not initially, but eventually. And if no one knows what the Department of HUD is, that's Housing and Urban Development. They're responsible for based on income, housing authority, and Section 8. And you know what I'm saying? So we have to understand, and they're using this wall, this so-called wall that they want to put up for the excuse to cut the benefits off. And so a lot of sisters on Facebook has left a lot of posts feeling some type of way. Oh, I've been on this. It don't matter. I raised my children. I understand that, sister. Do what you got to do. Use it for a stepping stone. But I try to let our people know that welfare is the art of war. It is a divide and conquer tool. And how is that? Because we think welfare is something that's new since the 1960s. There's been thousands of years of welfare with the Roman Empire, giving out welfare to the majority of the people that was the peasants or the proletariat, the average person at work. They did this in Russia. They did this way before 1960. And they know when you replace the man for welfare, because you know you're supposed to have no man there. And so I'm not bashing the sisters. I'm not bashing. I'm just saying, it's as a result of a lot of our sisters being on welfare, some of them say, I don't need a man for nothing. A man can't do anything for me. You see? So, I got another clip that I want to play, right? It's some elders on this part, right? And they're talking about, because they're about, the sister, she's about 60-something years old. So she was talking about when she was a child, how welfare was first introduced and all the rules they had to go by. They couldn't even have no television in the house. But that was the beginning. So check this out. I'm about to play it. Check it out.
My relationship with Kodaigo was that of a research assistant. I went to Washington University in graduate school in 1964. I was working on a National Institute of Mental Health funded study on social problems in public housing. My role was to study women and girls in Pruitt-Igoe. I was 20 years old. I'd just gotten out of college. Some of the girls were 18 years old, and I was 2 years older, but yet my life was vastly different. As time passed, I did wonder, would my life have been similar to that of the girls had my parents migrated from Mississippi to St. Louis? Would my opportunities have been different? I guess to put it bluntly, I never saw the people in Pruitt-Igoe as that different from the lives of poor people I had grown up with in Mississippi, except for one thing, the strong, tightly knit communities and families in which I grew up had begun to shatter around the people who were displaced in a northern city with few supports. And the policy and housing authority was to move the poorest of the poor, the most dependent families, to Pruitt-Igoe.
Before we move into Pruitt-Igoe, the welfare department came to our home. They talked with my mother about moving into the housing project, but the stipulation was that my father could not be with us. They would put up into the housing project only if he left the state. My mother and father discussed it, and they decided that it was best for the 12 children for the father to leave the home. And that's how we got into the project. The welfare department had a rule that no able-bodied man could be in the house if a woman received aid for dependent children. If a man lost his job, he's looking for work, he still had to leave the home. And there was even a night staff of men who worked for the welfare department whose job was to go to the homes of the welfare recipients, and they searched to find if there was a man in the home. Sometimes men came back at night to be with their families. Some were found in closets hiding.
I remember vividly my mother telling us, if white people come to the house and ask questions, tell them that your father is not here. Tell them that your father has never been here. You've not seen your father. I trusted her. I knew that there was a reason that we had to do the charade. And I participated in the charade. I sat there and looked those people in the eye and told them with pure earnestness, no, I have not seen my father. And no. My daddy does not live here. And but I knew that I was lying. That made me wonder, who are these people and how they have the power to make my mother lie?
We're giving you money. We want to be able to control you.
That's right.
We're giving you money. So we have the right to make stipulations as to how you use it and what you use it for. There were so many restrictions. We couldn't have a telephone. We couldn't have a television. And we were really left at the mercy of the system.
project, it seemed to be strategically planned to create an environment that people felt isolated, that people felt restricted, that people felt, you know, inhuman almost. You're bad. We have to restrain you. We have to curtail what you're doing. It was void of humanity. It was void of caring. It seemed more like a prison environment that you have to escape from.
They were treated in some ways like they were prisoners. If we are going to support you and to give you a few diesel dollars to live on, then we're going to extract blood from you. You're going to live according to the rules you set. And the rules just happen to be their changes. There's this whole undertone of morality. They had poor morality. They were immoral by virtue of the lifestyle they lived. Poverty never created morality. Poverty created want.
When we first moved in the project, we couldn't have a television. Here it is. And then my mother got a letter that we could have TV.
Barbie's dream house is a wish come true for both of you. And look,
I was always interested in the family programs. Programs with fathers. My Little Margie, where the father was so involved with his daughter.
Margie?
Come on in, Dad.
Margie, you know I've always tried to be both mother and father to you.
You've been wonderful, Dad.
Do you remember that little game we always play when you have a problem that you can't tell your father?
But I haven't got any problem.
Now come, tell me what's wrong.
When I looked at those sitcoms, I just felt like this is the way white people live. Because black people, from my experience, did not live that way. And I never questioned, I never wondered why. I just figured this is how it is.
This is how it is.
We have our home here, and if the colors move in and run real estate values down, it's bound to create tension. And you will have, well, I think your aim is mixed marriages and becoming equal with the whites.
Well, I just could not live inside them. I don't feel that they should be oppressed. But I moved here. One of the main reasons was because it was a white.
So I wanted to play that so y'all could just listen to the stories of people that was born when this welfare first came out and the rules and regulations that they had to go by. I'm painting a picture here because what Trump just did woke a lot of people up. It woke a lot of people up. And it's going to be a lot of crime. It's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to be going on. But also at the same time, it might repair a lot of relationships because we might start arguing over who ate the last can of beans instead of who been talking to who somebody else's man or whatever. So we have to understand history, because if you don't understand it, we'll be caught up in talking, nah, it's the black women's fault. You got a group of black men that talk about, I don't date black women. I date anybody else. I had a brother pull me to the side at a sports bar, one of my homeboys from back in the day, and he seen me with my girlfriend at the time, and which was a sister of course, and he was like, man, he said, I don't know how you do it, man, but good job. He was like, man, more power to you. And I was like, what you mean? He said, because he was married to a white woman, and he was like, man, he said, man, the white girl I'm married to, man, he said, she treat me good, she do this and she do that. But what he don't understand is that through all interracial relationships, it's mostly based off of sex. Because all the stories I get from black men that date white girls, man, they head is like this. Oh, my God, they worship the penis. oh my God, it's like this, it's like that. I call it personally, I call it erotic racism. Because if you wasn't good in the bed, then what need for you do I have in terms of a white woman thinking like that? Because it's actually a downgrade for me. I'm not even upgrading, I'm downgrading just by the image of a black woman and a black man. So you got to be at least an animal in the bed. Sex me like an animal. You see what I'm saying? So I hear a lot of most black men that I've ever known in my life that dated white women, baby mama white woman, married to a white woman, they always talked about the sex. You see? And so, like, they'll do anything. So there's some psychological things about that. But not getting off the subject, we have to understand the art of war. We have to. So I'm gonna do some reading real quick, right? I know black folks don't like too much people reading, right? But I have to read this because we was integrated with civil rights, with the welfare benefits. They gave it to us, and I understand people should use it as a stepping stone, but it was never created to be used to help you. Welfare benefits was always created to keep you on it. Pew Research Center, P-E-W, Pew Research Center, did a study. Out of 100% of people that were raised on welfare, currently on welfare, or was born on welfare, 96% of those people remain on welfare or living with somebody on welfare throughout their lives. Whereas only 4% of those 100% of people made it into the middle class and made something of themselves. Then that's why I say you got to go back somewhere. We got to start from where this stuff came from. They enslaved us and then they segregated us. They had the black codes and all these things, right? But that taught us how to come together. So civil rights bills them white folks been trying to pass those, but the rest of the white folks, they wasn't going for that. It wasn't the time to introduce civil rights back in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. So it was ripe for the picking in the 1960s. You have to understand what role the media plays. You have to understand that. And so we're going to go with how did we get to segregation? How did we get to that point of that legislation being passed? How did we get to that point? Because at the end of the day, you can't have no man in that household. You can't have no size 12 shoe up under that bed. Because they got inspection 2 times a year to see what condition the household is in, and indirectly, who's living there. You know how we do, sisters. Y'all know how we do. Inspection time. Look, take your clothes, put that shit in the trunk. Look, don't even come here. Look, just come back later on tonight. You know what I'm saying? We know how it is when it's inspection time. And I ain't bashing the sisters. We got to understand, if we get caught up into a conversation just bashing the sisters, you welfare queens, you bees, y'all did this and y'all did that. And then they can say, well, y'all ain't good for nothing. Y'all did this and y'all did that. And the whole time, the white power structure that created it for the way that it is for us to get at each other's throat, they sitting back the whole time like, ha, 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 ha. Ha, ha, ha. Look at those niggas. Look at them. That's what they talk about justice. Maybe justice is shooting one of them down in the damn streets. That's how they look at it. I don't look at it that way. So we got to go back to the roots of where some of this stuff come from, right? They've been trying to pass civil rights. They've been trying to pass that way before 1964, and they couldn't do it like that, right? You got to understand things. It's a saying amongst the elders back in the day. They say, what's more dangerous? They say organizations is more dangerous than bullets to kill those devils. Organization is more dangerous than bullets to kill those devils. Why did Martin Luther King didn't have that thought process? Martin Luther King won't bout no damn nonviolence, like, for real. He had people with guns, even though that day that he got killed, because there was some old other shit. Y'all got to study the case. William Pepper, which was his lawyer, the King family won a court case in 1998, or I believe 1999, and it showed how he was assassinated, and the shooter came from downstairs, and the shooter didn't come from where everybody was pointing at. You see what I'm saying? So Martin Luther King was a revolutionary. He did some things that I disagreed with at first, but he woke up. That's why I played that footage at the beginning when he said my dream has become a nightmare, because he said I was naive, because they used him against the movement, and he could organize people. He could really do that. So, look, check this out, right? What got us to civil rights? Roosevelt, right? Roosevelt passed the first deal after the Great Depression in 1929, because you know it lasted from 1929 to 1939. And war always put people to work, because, you know, a lot of these jobs women was excluded from. And so when the men are sent off to war, which was 12 million plus, that's a good boom for the industry. Do y'all get it? Because we're going to war now, and the same jobs that the men left behind because they went to war, the women took control of those jobs. Like when they was working for Bell South, and they wasn't behind the switchboards, they was only just answering phones. But when the men went to war, the women started getting the managerial positions and things like that. They were fighting. See, the white woman fight with her man is different than the black woman fight. Our fight is all one and the same, and we should never let it get off the narrative. I know we talk about homosexuality. We could talk about religion. Black folks should never get off the narrative. And what is the narrative? That means freedom, meaning that we should be able to do what we want to do without harming anybody else. Because the Mexicans coming over here, they seem to come together and stick together. The Jews, the Chinese, the Asians, they seem to come over here and stick together, right? So check this out. I'm going to read this out of an article, right? I got this off of Wikipedia. This is Getulio Vargas. He's the one that told Roosevelt, because Roosevelt was struggling with racism over here when they segregated us. Who gave Roosevelt the idea? Mind you, Lyndon B. Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Welfare Reform Act. But who got the ball rolling, the snowball rolling to the avalanche? Who got that started? During Roosevelt's term, during the second deal of the New Deal, which was in 1937, 1938. And so this is when Roosevelt started putting legislation in saying that you cannot discriminate against somebody because of race. The same thing that we see on our applications or the job description today. And so this started during Roosevelt's time, right? And so, but people still wasn't ready to integrate like that. And so Getulio Vargas told him, you're doing your integration, you're doing your segregation wrong. If you really want to kill black people and hurt them, you must integrate them. You must integrate them. Because 90% of black people was born at home with two parents that was married before 1964, before the Welfare Reform Act. But after 1964, 79 plus households, you got black children that's born to single parent households. What happened? Somebody took the place of the man. What took place of the man? Welfare took place of the man. I don't hate on no sister that took it. You know what I'm saying? My sister was on it. I was on it most of my life. But my sister, she's grown. I learned a lot of things from my sister. You know what I'm saying? My older sister. And so we have to understand what happened to us. These crackers, it's like they the masters of deception, right? And so if you don't understand history, if you don't understand how they work, you're going to be lost in the sauce. It's like they got a file cabinet. They got three folders. They got a folder for the black woman. They got a folder for the black man. And they got a folder for the black child. Within what folder, within the folder of the black woman, what do they have? We give them welfare benefits because that's going to take the place of the man's natural design of being the provider, the protector, the producer, right? Amongst other things. And women have more equal things also. And so you have that file. You take the black man place, and at the same time, in that black man's file and that cracker file cabinet, you go into that file. We're going to lock him up. They created crack cocaine in 1971 in a laboratory. Dr. Jolyon West and Dr. Ronald Siegel. Dr. Jolyon West and Dr. Ronald Siegel. Dr. Jolyon West and Dr. Ronald Siegel. They are neuroscientists and behavioralists and psychologists. They worked at UCLA. They tested crack cocaine 13 years before we heard about it on monkeys. The reason why I kept repeating their name because I wanted us to research it. Believe nothing that I say, research everything. And so what happened? Ronald Reagan started coming out talking about the war on drugs. Well, Nixon really coined the term, but Ronald Reagan passed laws, right? What happened? Black men got locked up. You see what I'm saying? And so then the children getting drugged up, the ADHD medicine. They're coming for the children. The woman, she got to work. She got to get out. She got to work. She got to bust her ass like my mother bust her ass. And she raised us the best that she can. And so we don't understand how war worked, right? So check this out. This was in Brazil with Getulio or Getulio, G-E-T-L-U-I-O, Getulio Vargas. He was the prime minister that was talking to Roosevelt in the 1930s. He told Roosevelt, y'all doing y'all segregation wrong. Integrate them. So I'm going to read a passage, right? All right, real fast. All right. Black folks, I know we don't like reading. I'm going to read it for you. All right. I'm gonna skip over some things, but check. You're gonna get the meat of it. Race is an elusive category and provides an even more elusive way to forge a sense of collective belonging. Now, this is talking about what happened in Brazil in the 1930s. Mind you, more black people are in Brazil. The slave trade. More of us went to South America than we did North America. And so, it's things that's going on over here in the United States of America that's been going on in South America. So the point guard to America is South America because they learn from them through their experiences with black people in Brazil. And so for most history of blacks in Brazil, Africans and their descendants had a strong sense of being different from their white slaveholders. The difference was forced onto them and used to hold them onto the bottom of Brazil's social hierarchy. And it left no doubt the Brazilian whites had no intentions of whatsoever to accept the moral and legal equality of blacks, which held true into the 20th century. The sense of black identity was indeed so strong during most of the colonial period and slavery, which lasted until 1888. This was in South America, 1807 in North America, which started in New York, Brooklyn, New York, which had its largest slave plantations. That African and Brazilian blacks was different in ethnic and linguistic background and different degrees of biological mixture repeatedly united to contest white supremacy and attempted to overthrow the system that held them at the bottom. On several occasions, Brazil barely escaped its Haitian moment. And we know what happened in Haiti in 1802, 1804, on up to 1811 or whatever. And so as late as 1931, the radical Frente Negra Brasileira, the Brazilian Black Front had a membership of about 200,000, mostly concentrated in the industrialized South. All right, that's out of an article dealing with segregation in Brazil. So check this out. I'm going somewhere, y'all. I'm going somewhere. Just check me out. I know my show is an hour show, but I put it for an hour and a half tonight. I'm going to get to the calls in a minute, but I got to paint the picture. In 1936, however, the authoritarian government of Vargas was the white dude that had told Roosevelt when he went and signed the New Deal. Roosevelt signed the New Deal, the second New Deal. The first New Deal was in 1933. That's how we got Social Security numbers. The second New Deal was implementing laws like, you can't discriminate with people not hiring them on jobs or whatever, even though a lot of whites still won't respect it. So Vargas was the president of Brazil, which had the highest population and concentration of black folks, African descendants or whatever. So the Vargas government sought to discourage any association that had the potential to endanger his project of national unity. The risk of factionalism and even sessions of the Great Depression during the 1930s, the Vargas government undertook extraordinary measures to forge a sense of nationality. So check this out, y'all. So amongst the success, this caused the sociologist Gilberto Freyer of 1986, Freyer's writings. And so I'm just going into it. I'm going to skip over all that. And so what happened was, I'm going to skip to this. Now check this out. To the Black Power movement, This is the Black Power movement in Brazil, way before what was their whole goal, white's whole goal was to keep the Africans in Africa divided from the Africans, or whatever that we call ourselves these days. Keep the Africans in Africa divided from the Africans in South America, America and the Africans in North America. And so I'm reading this stuff to y'all. This is history. Because I'm going to welfare. All of it got something to do with the title. Trust me, I'm going somewhere with it, right? To the Black Power movement, this move proved devastating up until the 1930s. Brazilian blacks were forcibly united by the perverse power of racism and social Darwinism. After the 1930s, a certain one's blackness was transformed into an act of civil upheaval and anti-patriotism, and little by little, as the Vargas regime, the racist cracker, that told Roosevelt that they doing their segregation wrong, don't segregate the blacks, integrate the blacks, and make it look like a happy parade. We are diverse and we change, which is a tool of the art of war. But that's another story. So as the Vargas regime made sure that its version of the truth was accepted, asserting ethnic differences became an act of political incorrectness, not only aimed against the state, but against mainstream society. Under Vargas, race was removed. Textbooks. This was in South America, y'all. This is where the United Snakes of America get their stuff from, because Roosevelt, that was the president at the time, the 1930s, went down there, and he gave him. So y'all ask me how I know. That's why I'm reading this to you. So he gave Roosevelt the tools. You integrate them. And so Roosevelt was looking at it like, why would we integrate them? We don't want to. No, you fucking up. Listen, integrate them. It will destroy the black dollar. It will destroy, because mind you, back during Tulsa, Oklahoma, our dollar circulated hundreds of times over a year before it touched somebody else's hand. So if that black woman get her hair done by another black woman, she spent her money at a black grocery store. That black grocery store, that person that owned that store spent their money with a black mechanic. That black mechanic. You see what I'm saying, y'all? So the money touched black people's hands. Now the black dollar only stay in the black person's hand for 15 minutes, and that's probably only the time it takes them to go from the house to the damn white stove. And I'm guilty of some of that stuff. So check it out. And so, all right, where I'm at. So under Vargas, it was removed from the textbooks. Okay, I read that. The state, the white, mixed, or indigenous had no other choice but to accept the reality to find ways of social mobility that explicitly took it into account. The core of the doctrine disseminated to Vargas was that no matter what the ethnic background, Brazilians are all mixed and hence one. Nevertheless, this was in an imagined community. So I just wanted to read that, y'all. And so I'm saying that because civil rights, we think it was meant to help poor people. It was meant to keep you on it. We don't understand the history of welfare. We don't understand Roman history. We don't understand Russian history. We don't understand the proletariat that was the citizens that was in Russia. You know what I'm saying? And so these are things that black folks get bored with, but it affects your everyday life, whether you know it or not. And there's been many economic crashes. There's been many, 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 many economic crashes. The only difference between economic crash and other economic crashes in the past, there was no such thing. In 1951, this country adopted something that we use today that we was born into that we don't think about, something called credit. I got some Michael J. Fox money, some Back to the Future money. You telling me I could go to the future, spend a future money, and I pay for it right now, even though it might affect me in the future? That's credit. It started, and rich people used to use credit. So this country about to fall, and we don't really understand it, right? And so welfare changed us. Welfare destroyed us, right? And so check this out. I want to go, before I get to the callers, I'm going to get to this next clip. I only play like five-minute clips because, you know, black folks' attention span is like the span of a commercial. And so check this out, y'all. I'm going to play this next clip. I'm going to expound, and then I'm going to get to the caller.
One second, y'all.
until then, and so all I had to say, I got to we got to understand how things work. We got to understand how war works. If I give female lionesses meat all the time, they don't need to hunt. They're not going to find a need for the male lion. If I keep feeding those female lionesses food, they start to lose their instinct, their natural instinct to hunt. I'm using that analogy for a reason. That female lioness, she loses her ability, her natural design by God. She loses her ability to do what she do, which is to hunt, certain techniques to feed the family, the male come, they push everybody out the way, and they protect them and all that. But when you condition this female lioness, so much so she's born into a world where she don't have to use her natural instinct. She's going to turn against that male lion. She's going to turn against him. You see what I'm saying? And so what I like to use that because we are nothing without each other. I don't get caught up into the black women. Don't get me wrong. I'll go in and I'll say certain things, but at the same time, us men, we have a lot of explaining to do, and you know what I'm saying? We got to save our face. And these children are watching. These children are watching. An elder told me there's no such thing as bad children. There's a such thing as bad parenting. These children didn't ask to be born. The number one people that adopt our black children are homosexual white people. The number one people that don't adopt our own damn children is us. You see what I'm saying? And so it was a story of a white woman that had some adopted black children that was from Philadelphia, right? They was in Minnesota. Fast forward, her and her dyke white woman, they done drove the children off the cliff. I know all white people that adopt black children don't do this, but I'm using this for an example. And so those children, I read into that story, those children, those four black children, somehow they got taken from their parent, and the aunt had a clean record, whatever, nothing was wrong with the record. They was told that they could not go to their aunt's house, and she wanted those children. Fast forward, those children was killed. I'm bringing it up because we the number one people that don't adopt. Shit ain't my problem. I ain't got nothing to do with that shit. I got more problems of my own. If we all think about that, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all of them would die in vain. Martin Luther King, at the beginning of my recording of my radio show, he said, "My dream has become a nightmare." Martin Luther King said that for a reason, y'all. You know what I'm saying? One second, let me get to this audio clip. Give me a second, y'all.
All right, one second. All right. So, check out what Harry Belafonte said, right?
You know, the last thing Dr. King said to me before he was murdered was in my home when he was sitting planning strategy for the Poor People's Campaign, which was on the horizon of the politics of the day. Martin said, "You know, I've been thinking long and hard about our struggle. We worked tenaciously for our rights, and the culmination of all that effort will be reflected in what we've come to call the integration movement." And I sit here deeply concerned that I suspect we're leading our nation on an integration trip that has us integrating into a burning house. For Dr. King to have been in this place at a time when we seem to be making great headway was a moment to pause and reflect. That reflection has taken longer than I had suspected it would, but it has certainly come to reveal itself fully when we look condition in which we find not only our world, but in particular our nation. We have a lot of wreckages around us. country about the most distracting, about the most important records to take a look at. These are the records of the Democratic Party. I have no treaty with Republicans. Nor do I. But the Democratic Party is not always about friends. And when we showed them the consciousness, the conviction, and the sense of great purpose that the people of this nation had into transforming our condition, all those Democrats from the South ran off and became Republicans as an act of punishment for what we were trying to achieve as a people.
Now, y'all heard what he just said. I had to stop it right there, right? Harry Belafonte was speaking about that footage I played earlier when Martin Luther King, it changed his mind up, like, yo, this ain't right, like, what they doing, like, I'm thinking I'm fighting on the right side. He said the Democrats, Harry Belafonte was just talking about, because that was at a Democratic National Convention, and he had Hillary Clinton beside him, sitting beside him, right? And how Democrats became Republicans, right? See, Democrats taught us how to be poor. They don't like us no more than Republicans. They give us handouts. But you got Bill Clinton, and guess what, y'all? This is gonna blow y'all mind if y'all didn't know this. Did y'all know that Bill Clinton is the only person that's inducted into the Arkansas Black Hall of Fame? Cause you know he played that guitar on the Arsenio Hall show, and that's what really brought black people's vote. Oh my God, he played jazz. Okay, and guess what? The first person that Bill Clinton killed because they criticized Bill Clinton for being soft on crime. He killed the black man that was certified retarded. And he had the man executed, right? To prove how hard he was on crime. And on top of that, he was the first white person that was inducted into the Arkansas Black Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Oh my God. If that ain't a smack in the face, I don't know what it is. But we love us some Bill Clinton. Man, I wish Hillary Clinton would have got elected. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are 18th cousins. And, like, people think, like, because I'm saying this, I'm making it up. Like, he's making that up. I can't help people don't read. Like, they playing games on us. Like, just like Obama and Dick Cheney, which was George Bush vice president, they ninth, I mean, they third cousins. And Obama, through his mom, Ann Dunham, him and George Bush, they ninth cousins. Through his white mother named Ann Dunham. People act like this is some stretch of the imagination type of stuff. So what does this have to do with all of the art of war and how does welfare destroy the black family? It's because if you don't understand the game that's being played, if you don't understand conquering divide, like as matter of fact, I'm going to play this clip real quick, right? It's like 2 minutes, 2-3 minutes, and I'm playing it for a reason. And the reason why I'm playing it is to show y'all how these white folks work. I just want to show y'all something. I'm going somewhere with this. Check this out.
The conflict officially began in 1986 when the first Northern rebel movement took up arms against the southern-based Museveni. But the deeper roots of this North-South divide can be traced back to the late 1800s during what was called by the Imperial European powers the scramble for Africa.
It's the history of these crackers doing us in.
For African resources.
And it works till this day.
People and the uprooting of their spiritual values by Christian missionaries would leave a permanent European stamp on the continent.
The mindset is the barbarians are backward and inferior, and for their own benefit, we have to uplift them and civilize them and educate them and so on. The psychology behind it is kind of transparent. You know, when you've got your boot on someone's neck and you're crushing them, you can't say to yourself, I'm a son of a bitch, and I'm doing it for my own benefit. So what you have to do is figure out some way of saying I'm doing it for their benefit. And that's a very natural position to take when you're beating somebody with a club.
Britain cut the largest piece of that from Cairo to Cape Town, in addition to Nigeria and a few West African regions. It was also the British Empire that in 1894 imposed an arbitrary boundary around many diverse ethnic groups and kingdoms that would make up Uganda. The southern Bantu-speaking people were given economic, political, and educational advantage. The northern ethnic groups, two in particular, the Acholi and the Langi, were the main recruits for military and police positions. By exploiting linguistic, ethnic, and cultural differences between the peoples of the North and South, Britain's divide and rule policies created a tension between them that helped maintain British rule.
Now, what did he just say? He said Britain divide, they kept up a divide and conquer tool to maintain those black folks, right? Is a reason I play everything that I play, black folks. The same way how they did us and divide, like the Hutus and the Tutsis, that happened, the Rwanda thing that happened, what he was just talking about, they gave education and military training to one group of black folks that was from a different linguistic group, that's from a different tribe. But they let them come on the land of the Hutus or the Bahutus. And when they came on that land, since they already had the educational training by the Europeans, by the British, and they had military training and educational training, the number one jobs, the number one people that's going to get those jobs are the people that got that training. So this is how the cracker work, y'all. I'm going somewhere with this. This is how this cracker work. I'm going into history. I'm showing y'all this for a reason, because when I hit welfare, it was meant for this. Now, fuck that. Y'all niggas is... No! Let's stop arguing with each other. This cracker laughing at us, man. You had these black folks, the Tutsis, that had... They was not from the actual land of the Hutus in Rwanda. And they had to educate... They was given education and military training by the British, that they had the guns. And they got the money. And... Just so happened, the British made it to where they drew up arbitrary lines to where who land is whose or whatever. And so as a result of that, these Tutsis would end up on the land of the Hutus. And with these jobs that came available through the British, the number one people that should have these jobs that know how to manufacture, that know how to take things, that know how to... You know, this college things, the school things, right? When you got other people that's uneducated, other people that the first thing they worried about is something to eat. They ain't thinking about no damn math. They ain't thinking about no damn career. They don't have no fucking future. They thinking about how I'm going to get something to eat in the next hour, or I'm going to eat your ass. You see what I'm saying? And so as a result of these, of our brothers and sisters that was the Tutsis that was given these privileges with the military training and the education, the people of the land that was originally of that land, it made them feel some type of way. It didn't make them jealous. That was their shit. It made them feel some type of way. So they started fighting amongst each other. What happened in Rwanda, even the movie Hotel Rwanda talk about it with Don Cheadle. But so the crackers, they focus on the after effect, and they show us visualization and footage and videos of black people chopping each other's heads off. And some of them motherfuckers crazy as hell, by the way. But they made it be that way. And so we get the finished product after the Snicker Bar wrapper been put on that shit. We get the finished product after it's been refurbished, dust down. They done got Lil Jon and Puff Daddy to put the remix on it. And we get the finished product that Africans ain't shit. And we divided. And I got Indian in my blood. And they keep us divided from all ways across the damn board, man. Look, check this out real quick, y'all. If you got a question, press the one. Press the number one if you got a question. I can tell if you got a question by looking at the message board that I'm looking at right now. So if you got a question, all right, I see the last four digits, 5867. I unmuted you. What's your name and where you calling from?
Hi, this is Constance from last night on the Drink and Think show.
How you doing, sister, man? I appreciated that conversation last night. I saved that and shared it with everybody.
Thanks. Well, I had a couple of things I wanted to respond to with the president. I learned a couple of years ago while Obama was president that a little girl at age 12 did a project, and she found that every single president that has been president in America are somehow related.
Yep. They go back to King Philip II, Alexander the Great's father.
But that, except for one president, I can't remember his name, but she said every president was related except for one, including Obama. He was, all of them are related.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't write down this stuff. I had just had a conversation with a girlfriend a couple of days ago about what's going on with the government shutdown. And she was feeling some type of way about it. And so she was talking about how they're taking away the food stamps and supplemental housing or all those different things. And I said, but you know what? That was the very thing that harmed us as a people. And we had a little small argument as far as to how it was helping us and da-da-da. But I asked her one big question. I said, think about Black Wall Street. Or what they call Little Africa.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I said, with what they did as a black nation, because that's what they were, those people of Rosewood, you know, before they burnt them down. I said, think about what they were and think about who we could be today if they had not given us a handout. I said, because we honestly became crippled by taking the handout.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to talk about the Indian thing. One thing I learned, especially since I became aware of a lot of things, I became aware in 2014. So I always knew as a child on both sides of my family that I'm a direct descendant of some Indian. I learned on my father's side when I was 30 years old that I was a direct descendant of the very chief Indian that they named the state of Tennessee.
And a lot of that's true, sister. But a lot of us was absorbed into those tribes as a result of us running away from what was happening to us, us being enslaved. You know what I'm saying?
But I need to understand something. Before you cut me out, I need to make you understand something. Where a lot of black people praise being an Indian is because one of the fights that we had was being black, and black was associated to being ugly or something negative. So when you picture an Indian, you might picture a light-skinned person with straight hair. But the original people of this land were dark people, which were Indians. And so the Indians probably that we associate are what they call the $5 Indian or the pink person. But the original people of this land were black, dark people. And I know that I am a direct descendant of the chief Indian that they named the state of Tennessee after. And my uncles took us back. You know, we got our story from my great-grandfather, whose mother was the daughter of the chief Indian that married a white man. But my great-grandfather, he looked mixed, like he looked like he was half black, half white. But, I mean, that's how he looked. But he explained that his mother was a black woman. She was black. So that's another thing.
But in terms of the relations of, did you hear me breaking it down with the history of the welfare and how it ain't just in the 1960s, how Roosevelt had a meeting with Getulio Vargas, which was the president of Brazil, and their segregation, the way that they did segregation in Brazil in the late 1800s, early 1900s, They integrated the blacks because they knew from the Haitian Revolution. They knew through that rebellion, like, okay, organization, we can't have nobody organizing. Them organ, we have to set this apart.
Right.
So when Roosevelt went down to South America during the second phase of the second New Deal, because the first New Deal, that's what gave us Social Security numbers. The second New Deal is what made it to where today we read, you can't discriminate against somebody being on jobs because of race, creed, color, and things like that, right? That came from the New Deal, the second New Deal, because he went to South America, but it was too toxic to talk about integrating black folks, because the same thing that happened with Rosa Parks, that story with Rosa Parks, that actually was the story that happened to that black sister, Claudette Colvin. Claudette Colvin
was
the sister that story that we heard from Rosa Parks, that did not happen with Rosa Parks. The NAACP, they reenacted what happened to that black girl, because that girl was 15 years old. She was born in 1942, and this happened in 1956 or 55, and she was on the front bus of the Lincoln Heights bus in Cleveland, Ohio, and she didn't want to sit in the back because some homeless people or whatever, some white dudes or whatever, they wanted to see. And so she refused, so they locked her up, but she was pregnant by a black man. Her name is Claudette Colvin. Why should we pay attention to this? It's because why would the government, to the untrained black mind, they're thinking like, what's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of all this? Why would the government hijack all our movements? You had Black Lives Matter, for example. Black Lives Matter, that the sisters started because of the Trayvon Martin incident and the Michael Brown incident. It's hijacked by the LGBT. You know what I'm saying? It gets hijacked and it changes the narrative and it makes it seem like we doing gay bashing when I'm not even gay bashing anybody. I'm just saying I'm not going to change the narrative. Most black people, everything black people need to be in agreement on is what's going on with all of us. We are doing things to each other as a result of what has been done to us. That's what it is. And we got to get to the, and change does begin with self. Because when you chart, when I was speaking on the radio, on Facebook last night, when y'all let me come up there, change does begins with self, and things around you begin to change, you know.
Right.
And so I'm gonna get. You got one more thing to say, sister? I got these other callers that got something to say. So you got something to say?
Just like what you just said, change begins with us as a people. We have to start with self. And then we can be able to change everything around us. So, I mean, I appreciate you having me on. And I see the change, though. I see we're waking up to a lot of stuff. We are, as a people, we are. And it's going to change.
Yep. It's going. And we just got to realize. And that's what, like last night when y'all was on the Facebook. And, like, we can't talk about one thing without the other. Like, if somebody just talking about black women, oh, y'all should be ashamed since Trump cut them damn food stamps off. What the hell you gonna do now? Yeah, ha, 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 ha. But then you could get caught up into talking to black men like, nah, see, them niggas ain't do this. See, what had happened was, nah, them niggas won't dare. You locked up and you don't. It leaves us arguing with each other. And then you got the aspect of what has been done, because the past is not left in the past, because I wake up with the past every day with the language that I speak. I wake up with the past every day with the name that I have and the name that people call me by. So don't tell me that it was in the past, because you see what I'm saying? So the past is the present. And so it begins with self, but at the same time, we cannot get caught up into the, oh, it's the women's fault. Oh, nah. Them niggas, it's their fault. And the whole time, these crackers sitting back laughing at us like a crazy, scary movie, like, ha, 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 ha. You know what I'm saying? And we looking crazy, man. So we do need to have a discussion about black male-female relationships amongst each other. That does need to be talked about. We do need to talk about the things that the family sweep up under the rug. Because black folks like to sweep things up under the rug, and we protect the person that did whatever they did that was wrong, and the person that was a victim from it. Oh, shut the fuck up. Look, like the R. Kelly thing is going on, right? Now, Sparkle, she came out because, damn, I didn't know he pissed on my niece, right? Because she was talking about it on the Breakfast Club, and I would have wanted to kill this dude, right? And so Sparkle family got paid off to say, basically, that ain't they niece, right? But everybody else from that girl's school teacher, her PE teacher, everybody said that's her in the case. So as a result, the family cut Sparkle off. I'm listening, and the whole reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's like, damn, that girl, she going through so much. And even the family trying to protect this motherfucker because he paid them or whatever. Then you wonder.
And think of how many girls would be saved today had they just went ahead and said that that was him. If they would have told the truth, this wouldn't be happening what's happening right now. Because he would have been dealt with then.
Exactly.
So they gave him reins.
And that's why he married Aaliyah.
He
married Aaliyah because the reason why he met Aaliyah is through her uncle. Her uncle is the one that got the rights to map the R. Kelly's masters, his publishing. That's why R. Kelly got the tour like he tore, because when he had sex with Aaliyah, even though it was annulled and it was voided, but they told him, you got to marry her. You know what I'm saying? Even though y'all going to front in public, you know what I'm saying? So all of it, it ain't just R. Kelly, because I get tired. The only reason why I get tired of hearing that R. Kelly stuff, and I brought it up for a reason, is because Harvey Weinstein, he's so much of a damn freak. You got recordings of him coming on to women, and they rejecting him, and he touching on them. And he even touched your boy Terry Crews. He touched his private part in front of his wife. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A man, a big buff football player. You know what I'm saying? So what does that mean? Because as soon as you criticize homosexuality, but not as an individual, but how it's forced on us, I don't think heterosexuality is supposed to be forced on children. And what I mean by that, I don't think they're supposed to be penises and vaginas, like they're teaching this gay homosexual stuff to our children. You know what I'm saying? And so that's just, we got to understand. We can't.
I have to say that I think that as parents, though, we should teach our children the differences.
We have to now. Today,
yeah,
the only thing I can tell my children is boys don't kiss boys and girls don't kiss girls. Girls kiss boys and boys kiss girls. That's the only, I can't go explicit because they have some little young minds, but I can't tell them that to set their mind like that.
Right. We do have to make them aware, though, that a boy has a penis and a girl has a vagina.
Yeah. And don't nobody supposed to touch you down there. Like I tell my mother, don't know, because she know how to wash herself and everything. I said, don't nobody touch you down there, baby. In the best,
right,
most nonchalant
you,
way that I could tell her, I tell her in the most cartoonish way, don't nobody touch you. You touch yourself down there. You don't. And I teach her in my own way about molestation, but in a child way, like the best,
right,
that I can. You know what I'm saying?
I
to where one day she's gonna be like, damn, I ain't know my dad.
Pocketbook. Did you hear me? We
exactly.
Call their little private part of pocketbook, the little girl. So we always tell them, don't nobody touch their pocketbook.
I like that. That's a code word.
Yeah. Can't nobody touch the pocketbook. You know, if mommy bathe you and touch you, mommy's bathing you, she's cleaning you up. Or like her, I have four daughters, so my children, they understood that a small girl. So if somebody touches you, you tell mommy. I don't care what they say, what they do, you tell mommy or you tell daddy. And that was understood for them. So, but I do believe that we should teach our children early on, because I think somewhere we sexualize, you know. Me being a breastfeeding mom, my daughter was almost three when I was gone, and people actually came at me as if I was getting some type of gratification from that. And that shit hurt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, ooh, I shouldn't be cussing, but that hurt.
Oh, yeah.
So,
hey, but look, sister.
Look,
stay in contact with me. I'm going to stay in contact with y'all. I would love to feature y'all as guests on future shows.
Okay.
Because my show is called The Elephant in the Room for a reason. That means I address...
Yeah.
The shit they swept up under the rug. Let's get that shit from up under the rug and let's talk about it. Because the first step towards healing is admitting that we got problems and talking about it. Because if you don't talk about it, you're going to hold it in and we're going to explode on people on the wrong way. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And so,
exactly.
You know, it's good to have shows like this. That's why I specifically called it The Elephant in the Room. But look, I'm going to stay in contact with you and I'm going to get to these other callers because they got some questions also, sister. And thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Somebody got a question. Last four digits, 20, 2011. Do you have any questions? I just unmuted you. Last four digits. 2011.
Can you hear me, brother?
Yeah, I can hear you.
What's up, Skeet? It's Rudy.
Hey, man. Yeah, y'all. This is my best friend, man. Yo, since 1997, I've known him, man. Since he was 15 years old, man. This is my best friend. What's up with you, brother?
Nothing, man. Tuning in like you say so. You know, I support
you. Did you have anything
movement.
To say in terms of the subject matter of the Art of War, how welfare destroyed black families from your own experience and what you've seen, how black women take on them? It ain't just about the black women and bashing them, but how the white man used them against us. And they don't see how they take on the mindset of saying things like, because all black women ain't the same. All black women don't say what I'm about to say. But the women that say, I don't need a man for nothing. A man can't do nothing for me. Can you expound on that from your own experience?
Yeah, definitely. Man, you know me. You know my story because we are best friends. You feel what I'm saying? And I, you know, need I go into detail about my situation, but long story short, it's women love to be on the system. You know what I mean? Like you said, some women love to be on the system, bruh. And
yeah,
that's how, you know, you grow up in the projects, you know, the candy lady, not knowing, yes,
oh, yeah.
The candy lady, cool and all.
Yeah.
She sells snowballs and all your favorite candy, but honest to God, she loved the system. Like, she never wanted to go anywhere. So, basically, when it comes down to the system and females and welfare, but it's not just females on welfare, it's also dudes, but dudes don't take it
yep.
as hard.
Well, you know, 95% of it is females. Because, you know.
Right. Understanding. But like I was saying, females take it a lot harder, a lot of emotional input, especially when this government shut down. And I don't know when they're going to open it up and what's the outcome going to be. Hopefully everybody start over. But if that do happen, it's still just going to create the same system.
And it's crazy, yo, because it's one thing to keep talking about, oh, they're going to cut welfare off. Now, Obama threw the alley-oop. What do I mean by Obama throwing the alley-oop? It was 12 million more people added to welfare food stamps under his administration. So
right.
He got your ass. He, you know what I'm saying? He threw the alley-oop. So Donald Trump came to LeBron James and dunked your ass. So Obama got you big and filled up like a fat pig, right? And then Trump
right.
came and put a pin into that balloon and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what the fuck? Because it was a test run a couple of years ago when those sisters' food stamp cards got cut off, those EBT cards got cut off in Chicago, and they was on the news with their babies on their hips. Like, oh, somebody got these cards ain't been working for 17 hours, and they was complaining. That was for 17 hours. That's why they just gave people February food stamps in January. You know what I'm saying? And they tell you on the card when you call it in, this is the last month. Or until further notice or whatever, that you'll have your February benefits on your January card. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
at the end of the day, my question is, where do we go from here? And my answer to that is, what did we do before food stamps? Because we used to barter with each other. I work in the daytime,
right.
You work at nighttime. All right. I'll keep your children at nighttime because I work in the daytime. You keep my children in the daytime because you work at nighttime. You see what I'm saying? And so
yeah,
we better get back to bartering. You know what I'm saying? Because we've been rocked to sleep, man. And it ain't just about us bashing each other. It's been used because when you understand Roman history, thousands of years ago, welfare system, when they used with Caesar, Julius Caesar, the month of July is named after Julius Caesar. Augustus Caesar, the month of August is named after Augustus Caesar. You see what I'm saying? These people that I'm naming that the month is named after, they had welfare programs back then because the majority of the people was the peasants, but they would rise up against them. So they gave them some fucking hush money. Look, as long as you stay like this,
right.
you can live. Like... It wasn't as drastic with keeping a black man from there because that was the more racist shit that's being done. But it's always existed. And so I tell the sisters, The child support system ain't child support, it's government support. All this shit is against us. Because the cracker gets zapped, they get 66 cents out of every dollar the black man got to pay in child support. So for every dollar that you pay in child support, 66% of that dollar, it goes to the federal government. Then it goes to the state government, that's 17%. That's why my homeboy, he paid $1,400 a month in child support, right? Do you think his baby mama get $1,400 a month? I'd be surprised if she got $500 a month. Because that's why I say we got to be careful with who we have children with. And when you do have children, the way that we have children, you better get two big beds. You better make room for the child support agency, the child protection agency. You better make room for the judges, the lawyers. You better make room for all of them.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and double jump and jump in here. I first started listening to your show just as support because, you know, my fiance is so close with you. I was put in a similar situation. I was, you know, thinking I had my stuff together. Life threw me a curveball, and I was in a situation where I needed some assistance, or better yet, where I qualified for assistance for the first time, and I relocated to a different state. And they were willing to roll out the red carpet for me as long as I was willing to put my child's father on child support. And
damn, that's crazy.
He was, I mean, like emergency, Section 8, transportation to classes, all this, that, and the third. But see, I was military in reserves, and I had my own car. I didn't need the stuff they were offering. And prior to going to the office, I'm a daddy's girl. I spoke with my father, and he was like, you have to be careful because some of the things that they're going to offer you, my child's father would have to pay it back. And we weren't together, but we had a good co-parenting relationship. And he wasn't in a position to do a whole lot, but he was trying. And, you know, I wasn't in a position to do a whole lot, but I was trying. So I couldn't be so judgmental. And being a daddy's girl and understanding that people go through things, right? So I basically declined what they were offering because I understood we were both young, dumb. We were trying to be grown at the wrong time, right? And our families were helping us to get back.
We wasn't taught any values. We wasn't taught any no morals, no family values,
actually,
or anything.
We were, but we were trying to be grown. We had those things instilled in us, but we was out here trying to be grown and fast, doing what we wanted, married at 20, had our own place and kids and trying to live life before we was ready, bottom line. And life caught up with us before we were ready for life. So we was in a situation, we were trying to reestablish ourselves. But bottom line, I didn't need what social services was doing. I don't need you to take me to and from class when I got a car. I don't need you to pay for my classes when I have educational benefits of my military contract. I don't need you to cut a check when I'm getting money from my military contract and I know how to budget. You know, when I get my check from reporting, I'm buying Pampers in bulk. I'm doing this. I didn't need it. I just went there to see what was available. I didn't know it would have put him in the hole until my father told me. So they don't really – my dad is the one who really put me on the game, bottom line. But, you know, her eyes kind of lit up. And she's like, oh, and you know his social, and he signed the birth certificate. Like, all you have to do is sign right here, and we'll get you Section 8. I was like, what? I don't want my living in a trap with just me and my daughter, and I don't need the rest of the stuff that y'all trying to kick to me. Like, I can stay at my mom's house, and she cook. Like, I'm good on the rest of that. So I definitely agree with, you know, everything that you're saying wholeheartedly, and it definitely is systematically
And look, sister. It is no swipe towards women that's owning. If they understand what
it's
I'm saying,
not,
if people go back and listen to the beginning of my video, when I go back, when that's why I talk from a historical perspective. When Roosevelt met up with Getulio Vargas, the president of South America, Brazil, and they started talking about segregation, he told Roosevelt, he said, y'all doing y'all segregation wrong. And Roosevelt basically asking him, this is fact what I'm saying. And he was like, you integrate them. If you want to destroy the black dollar, you integrate them. Because most of us was born at home with two parents, and we had values, we had morals. We weren't perfect. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, we was more self-reliant. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because
even that bartering thing you were talking about, that was the community. And they broke down the community that was going on. But, I mean, nowadays it's kind of sad. And even still, I was put in a position where I was miserable at my job. And then I have all of this education and credentials, but the employment options are available. And it's like, okay, if I take this pay cut, then I have these benefits that are available to me where technically my debt-to-income ratio, because I do numbers, so my debt-to-income ratio would change because then I would get, you know, this child care voucher. Then I would get these food stamps because my bracket would change, but I wasn't raised to think like that. And I was like, no, I don't want to be in that type of position where I'm getting all of this back in taxes. My objective is to get in a bracket where I'm going to owe for taxes. So that's what I'm aiming for. And, you know, and we made other changes based off of that. And I didn't do it by myself. I have a wonderful support system, so I'm not trying to kick it like I'm just this wonderful, great person. But it basically, the help, it makes you complacent. And instead of us flipping it on them as a people, where, like, I'm going to use this as a stepping stone.
That's the word.
It becomes
complacent. And it's
I'm
temporary.
I don't want to make too much because I'm going to lose these benefits and I'm going to have to get out here and grind harder.
If you get married, if you want to get married, you're going to lose this. If you want to further your education, you're going in order to get this, you got to stay like this. In order to maintain this, and it produces a mindset to where when you break up with that child's father, fuck that. You ain't seeing them. They ain't going around that B-I-T-C-H. F that. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, yo, hold up.
But that's the same thing that's even in the music, though. And now you don't even have to be a person that's talking about how I made it through the struggle that's pushed out in the music. I don't even have to portray to be this hard guy that made it. All I need is a drug addiction and to disrespect women.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know that's crazy. Hey, but look, I'm gonna get to the other call. I got another caller real fast. I'm gonna get to them. Hey, Rudy, I love you, man. I love y'all, Raven.
Love you too,
I appreciate
bro.
Y'all for calling in. All right, appreciate
you
it, brother. I'm going
to
hit you
up. Figure out how to dial in and get in
queue. Yeah, I got
thank
you,
thank y'all
man.
So much.
We'll chop it up later on Facebook.
Okay.
All right, brother.
All right.
Be good.
All right, brother. All right, I got, like, one more caller. All right, do you have anything to say? I see a question mark. Last four digits, 5867. Last four digits, 5867. I just unmuted you. You have anything to say? We have like three minutes.
Is that me again?
Who is this?
This is Constance. I was just still listening. But
oh, okay. Okay, hold on.
That's funny.
Hold on. You the only one. Let me see. All right. I had that question mark. Well, yeah, you only had the other question mark. Yeah, you can end it, sister. You can end it. We got like 3 minutes. I got like 5 minutes in all to end the show. But I got like 3 minutes dedicated to you, sister. Like, in terms of, if by you listening to the show tonight, we can't get caught up into the man, the black man. And then black men can't get caught up into the conversation of the women. We must look at the game that's being played on us, conquering divide, how it's still being used to maintain us, and how we are at each other's throats with gender war. You know, so. And then, like, but can you just speak to the fact of how welfare destroyed the black family the last 2 minutes?
Well, I see exactly what the sister said. Like, most of the women got caught up into what they can get as far as the benefits, and they didn't look at what they could have done to build themselves and build their children. I won't say all, because I have family and friends that have done it. And they actually used it to build themselves. But I did grow up around a lot of aunts that actually lived on welfare, and they still are, you know, or basically they don't know how to survive without those things. So I see that, you know, like I told you, I explained to one of my friends that it was something that crippled us instead of helped us. Because where would we be had we not had it? We would have had to fight, or we would have had to stand together to build something as a people, where everything got broke down. because we had those cute little handouts.
Yeah.
You know. So, as a people, you know, I do say that we it needs to stop with the black man. It's the black man that, you know, like our show last night, we wanted to talk about, you know, why.
Yep. Exactly.
Situation, you know, why is the woman always responsible for?
And I love that conversation too. Yep.
And
you're right. That was a good conversation.
Right, and it's never about us, you know, bashing the black man or, you know, the white. I mean, the black woman is this or that, but we wanna you know, allow people to expand their minds and look at some of the things that we've been doing from generation to generation. Because these are things that were taught to us, and or these were values that were set. And I think a lot of things we do need to do as a people is to stop looking at everything on the outside of us and begin to find ways to heal us as a community.
Exactly.
And
build
us as a community. We need to go and research Black Wall Street, you know. Or Rosewood or any of those little towns or cities that were black cities that built, and they had millionaires there, and how the white man shut it down and killed it. What can we do today as a people to change that?
Yeah, and that's the whole purpose of integration.
Maybe we should. Yeah, and I would say maybe we ought to thank Donald Trump for killing all of that, because that have forced a lot of black people to step up and start doing something. Like, they took this from us.
It was never meant,
oh my God,
it was never meant to help. It was never meant to help people in the first place. I understand people need it, handicapped people. I'm not saying that. I know they need it. I know those beautiful babies need it. I know people that retire elderly. I know they need it. I'm talking about the people that don't need it, which is most people that get it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, but it was never meant to help you out in the first place, though. You see what I'm saying? So I thank you, sister, for joining. And so I'm going to end my show. I'm going to end it on, like I end all my shows, on Amos Wilson, but I'm going to give my outro. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. Y'all can tune in every Wednesday at 8 p.m. You know, so next week I'll be discussing. We'll be talking about Chopping It Up Wednesdays. Chopping It Up Wednesdays, I have a segment every week. I mean, once a month in a week. And I talk about anything. We can talk about anything that y'all call in on. We can switch the subject up on. We can talk about stocks. We can talk about credit or anything. You know what I'm saying? So tune in every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time to the Elephant in the Room. I'm in my show on Amos Wilson.
White Americans have a criminal history. As a criminal nation, the nation is built on criminality and murder and exploitation. It is a part of their collective psyche. The United States is a mafia government. No one has done more damage and degradation and murder, rape, and robbery than Europeans. Yes. Therefore, in order to escape confrontation with their true criminal nature, they must accuse others of being criminals. What we call projection. They must become obsessed with the criminality of other people. And black folk become those other people, you see. As Clinton Cox said, you call the Indians savages so you can behave toward them what? Savagely.
Right.
That's the function of stereotyping, you see. If I call you a criminal, then I can treat you what? Criminally. I don't owe you justice. In fact, shooting you in the street is justice.